This is the Home Tech Podcast Show, number 59, recorded on January 19th, 2012. I am your host, Jim Paulson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here on blustery and cold. And we're supposed to get some snow today, Andrew. It never did come, thank goodness. Bellevue, Nebraska, and posted each week with world-class show notes out at theAverageGuy.tv. You can contact the show, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv, and I do check that email from time to time. So actually, I check it every day. So if you do want to send us an email, you like something, if you don't like something, don't send it. Not interested. But if you do like something, let me know. If you'd like us to cover something, I'd like to know that as well. I'm just being honest, Andrew.
Yeah, true.
Track me down on Twitter at Jay Collison. You can also find us on Facebook or on iTunes, and we've been getting a few more posts out there on Facebook. Just search for the Average Guy Podcast and leave your comments there. If you are out on iTunes, and you know what, I'd be real interested if you do download the show through iTunes. Maybe you could drop me a quick line and just let me know you do. It's hard for me to get those numbers, and I'm also trying to verify my feed burner numbers. And so if you are an iTunes subscriber, if you could, and I won't ever spam you, I promise, send me a note, podcast at theAverageGuy.tv. Just send me a note. Let me know you subscribe through iTunes. I'd be interested in how many of you are out there. While you're out there, if you want to drop and you like the show and you want to drop a comment, do that as well. That helps with our search rankings. We've also set up all the links you ever need to automatically download the podcast. If you're not doing that and you want to get it every single week, you can go out to theAverageGuy.tv. We have some links out there for you for both iTunes and standard RSS readers. Just look in the right-hand column and click on the link. So if you have questions, shoot me an email. Okay, we've had a few connectivity problems. We're getting the show started late this evening, and it's been kind of nuts. And of course, then
this
Sarah
podcast
just,
this podcast may contain traces of nuts.
Yeah. So Sarah tells me because she's the sound tech person, and of course, so right after I get things started, she says I have too much sizzle in my voice. Too much sizzle. Maybe I'm getting too close to my microphone.
You don't get told that often enough.
I don't know. I could use a little more sizzle, Andrew. Well, of course, with me tonight, we had trouble. I had trouble. Rich is scheduled, and he is out sick. Christian could not jump in, and we had trouble getting Gary connected. So with me tonight, just the two of us, Andrew Morris from Melbourne, Australia. Andrew, how are you doing?
Pretty good, thanks, Jim.
Good having you.
Looking forward to the end of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost can't come fast enough. Summer's okay there in Melbourne so far?
Summer's looking more like winter today, so...
Oh, a little cloudy. How are the solar panels doing?
Yesterday, fantastic. Today, not so great. So, they're still sitting on the roof doing their thing. But, the weather's been interesting in Melbourne the last couple of weeks. Last week, we had hail, fire, rain, brimstone.
Really?
And this week, it's been sunny, so...
Okay.
Very hit and miss.
Hail, you said?
Yeah, hail. They had around about tennis ball size in some parts of the city.
Good size.
Yeah, yeah.
It's good size.
It's the sort of hail when you know that sort of hail's coming, it's sort of like, where's the car? Where's everything expensive and how do I get it out of the way?
Yeah. Yeah, that we had that storm this summer like that at the dent in my car. Actually helped pay my car off. So it's free and clear. It's got a few dents in it, and that's okay. I can, it still dries.
It looks like
a golf ball, but it drives. And actually, there's some strategic aerodynamic advantages to having dimples in your vehicle. I mean, it works on golf balls, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, well, good to have you. It's your summer is on its way out already. You're halfway through, and you've had more warm days than you'll have for the rest of the summer. Is that kind of sad?
Our nice weather tends to go through till probably April, May. So we get to Easter, and we get to Easter at least.
You guys are soft.
Yeah, yeah, and if it's a mild winter, we get good weather all the way through.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's a lot like I grew up in San Jose, California.
Yeah, very similar.
I would imagine Melbourne's very, very close. And everybody says when I tell them that, of course I live in Nebraska, notorious for bad weather, and they always say why, and I'm like, have you been out to the West Coast? I mean, it's beautiful, but God, there's people everywhere. I mean, it's nuts, and the taxes are bizarre, and the people are bizarre, and the Congress people are bizarre, and so it's California is a weird state, and I couldn't be more glad to not be living out there. I look forward to your letters, Californians, but it's just not. Although there are some beautiful spots in California up north, in the Redding and Red Bluff and Shasta County, is beautiful. Mm. It's just like the country.
But anywhere there's national parks for
miles. Yes, yeah, very very
up beautiful. Around Yosemite and
yeah. Yeah, well, in Shasta, I mean, if you don't mind a volcano, you're you're in good shape. Shasta's been dormant for a long, long time, but of course we know Mount St. Helens blew in 1980, so there is still some activity up there from time to time, but it's a beautiful country. And so anyways, we're here to talk. Alluded to this last night on the Home Server show, but last week I got to order an SSD drive. Did it drop out for good? Oh, okay.
No, it's so back.
It's back. Okay. God, we're just having some weird issues tonight.
I thought you must have pressed the onboard mute button then.
Oh, no. I just moved it. You know, I wonder if it has to do with maybe the tightness of the cables here. Let's try that.
Oh, good.
I purchased an SSD drive. I've been wanting to do that for a while to try it out. I didn't realize kind of what a stir it would make, and I'll talk about that here in just a second. But I'd gotten a gift from Newegg and of $100, and I wanted to use that towards something. And as I started thinking about it after Christmas, I thought, you know, we talk a lot about SSD, and of course SSD stands for solid state drives. Yep. Those are memory-rich, as I like to call them, memory-rich hard drives. They're smaller than your regular spinning drive. The average spinning drive today has between 1 and 2 terabytes, or 1,000 to 2,000 gigabytes, roughly. Most SSDs range between 60 and 120. Right now, the ones that are affordable, 60 and 120 megabytes. Yeah, yeah. So they're very, very small. For the average person, and if not really, Andrew, what I'm finding have not really shown up on the radar of the average guy for the most part. That's all of us enthusiasts know about it, but the average guy is kind of not too aware of it.
I tend to think your average person's a bit afraid of the cost, and they don't quite understand it. They look at it and they go, "Solid state, what does that mean?"
Right.
That's my take. I'm put off by the cost myself. A lot of people around me at work are. Oh, I just upgraded my laptop to an SSD drive, and I'm like, okay, how big? 80 gig. So, cool, you got an operating system and half your email, and the rest of it sits on a USB hard drive. And they go, yeah. I'm like, right. Fail.
Yeah, but the performance, so let's talk a little bit about why. So, if you go out, if you're listening to this, I did a post last weekend on this, and I posted I used ATTO benchmarking, which is something Rich O'Neill, and I was hoping to have him on tonight to talk through this with me, because he's kind of the SSD expert, at least the guy, he's the friend that I know the best that knows the most about SSDs, and kind of walked me through and helped me through the whole process. And so I thought it'd be kind of cool to document this, at least from the average guy standpoint, and say, you know, what would I expect? I didn't know a lot about SSD. There's a lot to them, a lot of technical stuff to them that I really won't spend a lot of time talking about here. What I really want to do is just kind of briefly go over the average guy experience. And yep. And so that drive came in. It's a Mushkin drive. There's a couple different varieties of drives that are out there, ScanDisk. And now that I'm going to try and rattle them off, I'm going to probably fail.
Intel's
get those. Yeah, Intel has their own. OCZ is a brand. If you go out to Newegg.com and just search for solid state drives, you'll get kind of a whole list of drives that are out there. And actually, Rich and I did a podcast 2 weeks ago as I was choosing the drive on this, and it's still not out yet. We'll get that published as they're walking me through picking this drive. It's a good. If you've never, or if you've been thinking about SSD, look for that over at Rich's Random Podcast Generator. But and so they talked me into a 120 gig drive, which when I was done loading Windows on it, I got it down to about 30 or 40 gigs. So that leaves 80 to 90 gig left for me to do stuff with. Now, Andrew, you know my philosophy of hard drives is I try to keep very little actually on my local hard drives. and I try to move as much stuff as I can to the network that I really need to save. So an SSD, a small SSD drive works for me in some ways because I don't keep a lot of data local. If this the SSD drives today come in a 2.5-inch configuration, which is just like a laptop drive, so they're perfect for a drive replacement on a laptop. They slip right in and do that. They'll also they will seriously increase the performance of your laptop if it's a little sluggish. Even newer laptops, if you put one in, you'll see a performance increase. I put it in a workstation or I put it in a regular computer, and I actually used that comes with a 3.5-inch drive plate that you mount the SSD to. And then I actually mounted additional rails on the side to make it 5.25 so that I could mount it right underneath my DVD drive in my PC. Yep. So it's in there, up and hidden, very small, very cool. These things don't have any heat for the most part to them. Nothing you have to necessarily cool. Rich wanted me to duct tape it to the side of the...
I think a lot of people use double stick tape, don't they? And they just, you know, with a bit of the foam insulator in the middle and just slap it on the side, plug your connector in and you're golden.
Yeah. Yeah, because you don't need it. It's one of those things that doesn't need to be mounted necessarily correctly for airflow.
Yeah, and there's no vibration and any of those sorts of problems that you get with a spindle drive,
No moving parts, nothing to worry about from a heat perspective. I had all the components, and so I just rigged it up and put it in there. Went through the process. I did a fresh install of Windows on that, which is not difficult. You can do that from a CD or a USB, a USB memory stick.
Yep.
And did the install. And then in the post, you'll see there's two additional things I did. I moved the page file off of the SSD drive and moved that over to the spinning. I still have a spinning drive in there that records TV content. I don't want to fill up that drive with recorded TV from Media Center. So I still, and I don't need a fast drive for that. So I still move that off onto a spinning drive. So I move my page file over to that as well, so it's not trying to write out to that. You don't have to do that. That could stay there. I have a 8 gig of memory in there, so it took up 8 gig of space for the page file. And moving that got me a bunch of room back. And then I did one other thing. As I look on this here, turned off hibernation. And it reserves a bunch of space so that when both page file and hibernation do very similar functions in that they take anything that's in memory at the point and write it out to the hard drive, one for a disaster. Page file is used when the PC crashes or it has some problems. It writes that out to the hard drive so you can debug it. Hibernation just takes whatever's in memory, stores it so that when you turn your PC back on, it's right there. And, of course, I don't use hibernation on a desktop. No need for that, and so I turn that off. Got a bunch of space back for that. And you can see on the post. By the time I was done, I had about 93 gig of that 111. It's 120 gig hard drive, 111 because of the math.
Lots of formats, networks.
Yeah, not bad.
That's pretty respectable, isn't it, really? I mean, what's that, 27, 28, 28 gig for a full Windows install? That's with Office and everything else?
Sure, that's everything. I put all the software back on it that I use, Procaster and Windows Live Essentials and Security Essentials and, you know, just kind of the everything that you use on a regular basis
that's pretty impressive. I mean, when you consider that you're not going to store a lot of data on it and whatnot, it gives you that room and that flexibility that you probably wouldn't think you'd have otherwise.
Yeah,
I've always thought, an SSD, I'm gonna run out of space.
And a very valid point. You do have to think about space management a little bit more careful than you would without one, right? I mean, I've filled up a terabyte. I mean, I had a terabyte spinning drive in there before, and I got close to filling that up at one point just because I put everything on it.
Yeah. And I think I'm just looking at my home PC. You know, I've got between two disks, I've got just under 200, just under 500 gig, and I think I've got about about 90 gig free between two drives. So
yeah, well, a little bit. It's gonna take a little bit, and I have not completely ruled out spinning drives. I mean, so if I have a home server, and I've also got some Drobo space that I use. My goal is to really, as I'm recording the podcast tonight, the file that we're doing for both the audio and the video is being recorded to the SSD drive, right? So it is going there. When I am done, I'll pull that off and move it off onto the network, or I'll move it somewhere to the Drobo or something like that, maybe both even. And the goal will be every week to kind of clean up that, clean up those recordings that I do and move them off. And so from time to time, it is a limited amount of space, so you kind of got to check the drive from time to time, make sure you're not filling it up.
Yeah.
And so it is. It does require. Now, if you go out to theaverageguy.tv and scroll down a little bit to look at this post, I did post some benchmarks, some read and write benchmarks. That again, I just took the defaults on this tester. I didn't really do much. Installed it on the old PC, and you can see, my read and writes starting at about this is in megs, so about 8,000. Let's just say about 8,000 for small files.
Yep.
And then they jump themselves up to, 15 meg, 25. This is megs per second, 25 megs per second. Eventually capping out at about between 80 and 90 megs per second on the spinning drive. Okay, so
yep.
Even in the larger files, capping out that. When I ran that same test on the SSD, I got double the speed on the smaller files. So it went from 8 to 9,000 to... 19 or 20, almost double the speed on that, on those files that are half a meg or smaller. And of course, those smaller files are the ones that are taking longer to write because of the overhead associated with them. And then that just jumps up from there, 36, 68, 84. I'm already maxed out on the other drive at this speed, but it goes all the way up to 280,000 megs per second in a read and write speed. Roughly, these are just big round numbers. And so I'm getting almost four times the write speed on the larger files.
Yeah, so that must make a hell of a difference to actually your usability and your seat of the pants performance on the machine too.
Yeah, so Media Center opens in like 6 seconds on average. Nice. I mean, just bam. Click. Oh, it's there, right?
Yeah.
I don't. You open Chrome and you click it; it opens, and the web page is there. There's very little waiting. One of the things I was hoping it would speed up was video rendering, and of course that's very CPU intensive, and so I did not see much of a change when it came to actually rendering video or converting video. But everything else has been dynamite. It even runs Procaster faster. I mean, I'm seeing less of a CPU drain as we're broadcasting right now.
Yeah, so the machine's not absorbing the buffer as much, I suppose, because it is doing that write that little bit faster.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And it was, one of those, one of those situations where it's not. I mean, in some ways, I want to say it's night and day, because it is a big difference.
Yeah.
And the average user is going to see a performance increase, I think, on just about any piece of equipment they put it in.
I guess it's probably when you look at what's coming through the pipeline at the moment as well, and with respect to Ultrabooks and the MacBook Air and stuff like that, I guess that's where they're getting their appeal as well. They're leveraging the performance out of them, because I think they've all got SSDs in them. So I think what we're going to see is, that's where a lot of those gains are coming from as well.
Yeah.
So your average punter's, wow, this machine's, so much faster than my old one. And, the sales guy's sitting in the back of the room going, we haven't told him it's got an SSD drive in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't
know. It's four times faster. It's four times faster. Well, hello.
And they're expensive because some of the cost has been in those SSD drive. The average price of the SSD is coming down. And they're made in different plants, and they're made out of different components. And the more we buy them, the more prices will come down on them.
Yeah, that's the old supply and demand, isn't it? Once the market absorption happens, then people are going to jump on it, and it's going to become affordable for the masses.
Yeah,
people will tell their friends, I put this SSD drive in my machine, and it's so much faster, and da da da.
Well, let me tell you what happened. So on Sunday, I'm at church, and the guy who is kind of oversees all the media, and music and media at our church, is a reader of the blog, and so, which I didn't realize, and I should have known.
We've got groupies.
So he comes up to me and says, "Hey, I heard that SSD drive made a real big difference." And yeah. I said, "Yeah, it's incredible." He said, "They have a PC, and it's actually sitting right over here right now on my workbench." Yeah. He said, "We got this PC that's really struggling to render and keep up with Vegas. They use Vegas Pro for their for their video capture and editing." Mm-hmm. So I brought the PC home, and it just had 3 gig of RAM, and I guess I'd known that. It has a 3 gig of RAM, a half a gig video card, and a regular spinning drive. Now, it does have a Core 2 Duo quad-core processor, so still a fairly decent processor.
Yep.
Hampered at this point by not enough RAM, a I.O. to a spinning hard drive, and a half a gig of video card. For doing what it's doing. And when we bought that thing 2 years ago, I was there when they bought it. It was super fast, and it worked for what they were doing. But, files have gotten bigger. Things have changed. I'm sure with 3 gig of RAM trying to do video, these large videos, most of these programs load up the entire file, or they make an attempt to load up the entire file into RAM.
And once it starts paging, and once it starts writing after that page file, that's when you start getting...
Right, right.
Yeah.
So for $100, we bought 8 gig of RAM, and they didn't mess around with it. They had 2 half a gig sticks and 2 1 gig sticks for 3. And I said, "Well, you could just buy 2 more for 2, and we could get 6." And he goes, "At $100, let's just get 8. So yeah. We'll bump that thing to 8, which will be great. And then I've got another Mushkin solid state drive, 120 gig hard drive that they bought for $150. It's SATA 2, but this PC is SATA 2, so there's no sense in getting a SATA 3 drive in there. And that'll go in this weekend.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be interested to see what the feedback is on
me
the performance.
Too. Yeah, me too. I think it'll be you go out on a limb, right? You do these things as you're the tech guy, and you go out on a little bit of a limb and say, "Oh yeah, this is going to be great." Well, it better.
Yeah, you've got certain parts of your anatomy on the line.
yeah, for sure. And so it's but I think we've been talking a lot about this. I know the guys on BYOB over at the Home Server Show. We've been talking about SSD for a while. It hasn't made its way down. I don't think SSD has made its way down to the average guy. I'm going to say if there was a single upgrade besides RAM that you could make, if you don't have enough RAM right now, the time to buy it is right now. In fact,
on my wife's golden laptop,
I need to probably add RAM to her laptop as well. RAM. Yeah, that's RAM in a laptop, right? memory and hard drive, $250, and you probably have a fairly quick running new PC at that point.
My folks have got a little HP a netbook thing, and we upgraded the memory in that just recently because it was starting to run fairly slowly, and I think for memory it cost us like $39 to double the memory in it, and it's still not a great performing machine. It's a little Atom processor, so inherently by design it's let down by that. But the extra memory has just made such a difference. The next logical step would be an SSD,
mm-hmm.
because it's the only other way you can really get the performance out of it.
Right. Yeah, that removes the I/O bottleneck, and I see my videos frozen. But speaking of I/O bottleneck, I must have a video issue here.
It's working for me.
Is it?
Yeah.
There it goes. Right on. So if you haven't thought about it, so last night I've got this Mac G4, this PowerBook G4, that I'm going to give to my middle son as he goes back to college. Take notes on and stuff. And I said, "Hey, I'm going to give you this. You might want to think about dropping a solid state drive in there if you can find it."
Jim's drinking the Kool-Aid.
totally into it. Well, anyways, if so you got questions on that, there's a post out there. You can take a peek at it. You can also join us on Facebook. There's been some couple threads on it out there on Facebook. Just search for the Average Guy Podcast and find our Facebook page. And you can drop those out there. I'd love to see kind of some average folks try this solid-state drive. Again, it's not terribly expensive, 120 gig, $150. It's almost $1 a gig. If you shop smartly, you can probably get it for $1 a gig at this point. And that's kind of the sweet spot right now. Sounds expensive if you compare it to a spinning drive, but you're going to get incredible performance out of it. All right, Andrew, let's talk a little Skype versus Google+. During the CES coverage, I spent a lot of time on Google+, and we're actually on it right now for the podcast.
Yeah, and it's working well.
Yeah. And you know, I think we've been on Skype, and one of the disadvantages to Skype has always been when you come across somebody who has a poor internet connection, it seems to drag everybody down in the process.
The weakest link.
Yeah. A lot of people, not everybody has made the jump to Google Plus, and if you don't have a Google Plus account, it's really easy. Just go to plus.google.com, and if you have a Gmail account, just sign in. You already have a Plus account. But if you don't, sign up for a Gmail account. Yeah, I know it's one more account, but get past it. Get through it. Google Plus is a lot like Facebook in the sense that it has a stream of consciousness. Today, a lot of photographers, a lot of tech guys are out there. You're still not finding your friends and family like you're used to on Facebook. But Google Plus has this feature called Hangouts, and that's actually what we're in right now and is just dynamite for video conferencing with friends and family.
Yeah, and it's a lot easier to use than Skype too. You want to get together with all your friends. You don't have to add anyone into a separate program or anything like that. You know, once you're in your Google Plus, it's just a matter of, you know, start a hangout, invite your friends to it, and they can come and go as they please. And as Jim was saying, very very good with poor bandwidth. We were talking to Singapore at Christmas time over a satellite link using Google Plus. And that was, you know, so much better than Skype, because with Skype we couldn't even get a video connection up.
Yeah, well, and it's up to 10 users. So with Skype, if you put 10 users in there, first you got to buy extra to get the video. You've got to buy an extra subscription, and this year it's $100 to have this multi-group video chat. Where with Google Plus, it's free. So that's one good reason to be in. With Skype, it always seems like, Andrew, if you made that call to Singapore on a phone line, let's just say for example, or you're calling somebody's, you know, you're calling not their phone, but you're maybe using the Skype software on their phone, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That connection seems to drag everybody down. And I don't know why Skype does that. Hopefully Microsoft will fix that someday, but it's horrific, especially in the podcast when we try and bring guests in and such. It's just horrific if somebody's got poor bandwidth. Google Plus has seemed to have figured that out in some ways, and now it seems to get better all the time. So if somebody with poor bandwidth comes in, it doesn't seem to affect everybody else's audio and video. Worldwide deployment of it, so I think no matter where you're at, you can have access to it. And we use it all CES, and I've just kind of went, you know, I went back. If you're watching live, I kept thinking, God, why am I not using this anymore? But if you're watching on the live stream, one of the nice features about this is, so especially if you're trying to help somebody with something, and there's a screen sharing capability. So if I wanted to show you, for example, a web page, and let me pull up this one, and our friend Steve Ballmer is on it. And so I can come over here and select that. And that's going to bring up that site right into the chat for everybody to see. So you can see that. At least here, it's not something you'd want to try and read something off of. But if you're trying to show somebody how to do something, you can actually kind of do it right here through Google+. And it's a nice way to kind of help people. Hey, click on this, click on that, go over here. You know, it allows you to share the screen very, very simply.
Yeah, or vice versa, they can share their screen to you and you can say you need to click on this and you need to click on that and actually walk them through it so that you're not showing someone how to walk through a problem they may be having at the time. And that's always, you know, one of those things too, you know, best way to learn how to do something is to do it yourself.
Right.
But this gives us the ability to then, you know, show those people, you know, so you can see what they're doing without having to sit in the car for an hour to get to them or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, we've used things like TeamViewer. I've used things like Mesh to be at Microsoft's, you know, the Mesh, the Windows Live Mesh client. But this is easy to make a connection. You send an invite. Now, the invite process is not real clean at times. The invite shows in the stream, what they call a stream, and that's all the things that are going on. And if you have a very busy stream, that invite can get buried pretty quick. And so it takes a little bit of work to track that thing down sometimes. But for the most part, that's the hardest part.
And with Plus, you know, once you start following a bunch of people, it can be a lot like Twitter in a way. So if you're following a bunch of photographers like Mike Howard and I do, you often find that your stream becomes, you know, an ever-moving torrent of information, so you can, you know, have certain photographers who'll post something every 10, 15 minutes if they're in a busy period, and then you know it'll come back up the top of your feed when someone comments on it. So similar very much to the newsfeed view in Facebook, but if you're following a bunch of people, it moves a lot faster. But you can quieten it down as well.
Yeah, it is some social media or social networking with some control. It can be a little overwhelming, just like Facebook. Most people don't check their Facebook settings. But some people say there's not a lot of activity on it. Google reported just this week that they have 90 million people signed up on it, and 2/3 of those people come to the site every day.
Yeah.
So 60 million people active on it. Is that enough? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You're probably not going to find your parents on it, like you have on Facebook, right? Everybody is using Facebook at this point, but Google Plus has got some cool features. And there's a video conferencing feature. I don't think you can. It uses Skype, but on Facebook as well. That if you want to go point to point, it works pretty well. And I actually have not heard that touted very much, or even talked about. But we use the video stuff in Skype, Facebook, which is based on Skype, and that works real well.
Yeah.
Yep. So I think from here on out, I know Mike Howard as well over JPEG to RAW. We had him on last week. We are, we as podcasters are all trying to make the switch over to Google Plus and kind of move away from Skype. The one big drawback for me is I can't make phone calls out of Google Plus.
But you can use but you've got your integration to your Google Voice account too. But I think it's probably a matter of time before they integrate that into the Hangout feature.
You think so?
No, I reckon it will. It'll make them a truly comp entity with Skype then. So I think, and you know, why wouldn't they? You can do video talk straight from within the chat feature within Gmail as well. You don't have to necessarily go to Plus. So I think it's just a matter of time before someone in Google says, you know, hey, if we get our Google Voice guys to talk to our Google Chat guys, we can probably get this little thing going on where you can talk to the real world as well as talking within the computer environment.
Yeah, yeah. I think it makes sense. I hope they're moving in that direction.
I guess who knows, really.
Yeah, yeah. It's that would be the next, if I could, because I can, you know, I can go into my Gmail client, so to speak, my Gmail page, and make a call directly from the page for free, make a phone call. So what would be great if there was a little dial pad, you know, right here in a Google Hangout, if I could invoke a little dial pad, call somebody, and then just bring their audio into this conversation. Well, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
That'd be phenomenal. Yeah. And then once you know, in the next iteration of the of something like that, you know, you can see that we'll probably be able to bring in the video feature that's built into most handsets these days and turn it into a video call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now there's some cool stuff coming.
Yeah, we should be in product development for Google.
I'm sure they've thought of that, Andrew. I'm just saying, I'm sure they thought of it. Let's talk a little bit about, was it yesterday or 2 days ago, there was kind of a blackout on the internet, so to speak, right, in support. Was that yesterday, the 18th?
Yeah, it was yesterday. So one of the things that I guess this was, what we were looking at was the internet crackdown against piracy. I think there's various acronyms tracking around. There's PIPA and SOPA, and I'm not really sure what any of them stand for, but I think the biggest impact that was seen by a lot of people was, you know, the Google logo had a great big black box over the top of it, and, you know, Wikipedia took a stance, and anytime you tried to go to a Wikipedia page, you'd get a big black page that came out over the top, and not really sure where they thought they were going to get with it, though, from both sides.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually I've heard some stories, though, that did make a difference, and there were some 29 senators who switched their vote from being for it to being against it after they saw. Now, I was listening to This Week in Google, and which had recorded yesterday, and they put out last night. Yeah. I can't verify that or follow up on it. I'm with you, Andrew. I'm really skeptical. In fact, who was I talking to? Maybe it was Rich earlier about, you know, does writing your congressman or senator, does that really make a difference? Do you feel like in Australia you can write your local government official and it makes a difference there in Melbourne?
No.
Yeah.
Doing some thinking music with that. No.
I think the average American probably feels that way too, is that, oh, what difference is it going to make? You know, sometimes some sections that we have get really poor. I mean, maybe 15 or 20% of the people come out and vote. And the naysayers, oh, this is what's wrong with democracy and blah, 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 blah. I don't get too worried about that. I see things like this. I think when it really does matter, and it's really important, and it really needs the attention of the public. Whether you fall on one side or the other on this Occupy movement that is going on here in the United States.
Yeah, it's happening out here as well.
Is it as well?
Public squatters, really, Occupy.
Yeah, and it's kind of trendy. You know, it's. I think now it's becoming more trendy than... I was reading a report that in L.A., the Occupy folks, once they left behind like 2 tons of trash.
Yeah, that's what we've seen out here as well.
Yeah, right, it's like, so now the city government has to pay. So they just imposed, you know, a fee on their own city government.
To have to clean up after them.
To clean up their mess. They're not being very good stewards. You know, they're rallying against the 1%, and yet they trash the public land, the city offices that they're on. Well, that being said, though, that's not my point. The point was, I think it is important when you feel passionate about something like that, whether it be SOPA or whether it be the Occupy movement. I think it can make a difference, and I think especially in the United States Congress, there's a lot of government officials who don't really understand the internet, and are going to just go with what they hear. And when things like this happen and people start saying, hey, you should probably pay a little more attention to it, I think it can make a difference. So does the individual make a difference? I don't know. But I think in a free country, in a free world, in free democracy, I don't ever want anyone not to act when they feel passionate about it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think the thing, one of the things for me that this brings home is, I see where they're going with the piracy component of it, and you know, if that were to happen, to me that'd be a tragedy, because we get most of our television from various sources long before it hits the screen in Australia. But I think it shows it shows an immense lack of understanding about what the internet actually is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think if you don't even take into account, you know, the software piracy, the video piracy, and all the rest of it, and where they're coming from with that, if you look at the internet as a whole, it's always been an unpoliced medium. And effectively, what this was going to do for mine is turn it into a policed media. And you just can't do that. You know, how long have we called it the global information superhighway?
Right.
I mean, you know, unless you get every single country 100% on board with this, I just don't see where the U.S. Congress was going with it.
Well, certainly, you know, it reeks a little bit of what China is attempting to do or is doing in their filtering and monitoring of the internet as they shut things down. Mm-hmm. I think the scary thing about it is the lack of due process that came.
Oh, yeah.
And where someone could just say, hey, take them off, and they're immediately taken off. And that just, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and eventually that would become a problem.
Yeah.
I think there were some, you know, I don't want to get too political on this, but because this is a tech show, but it is related to technology. There should always be some kind of due process, and it's a removal of freedom, not an enhancement to it.
And from my perspective, you know, as an Australian, I've got services that are hosted in the US.
Right.
You know, websites and things like that. You know, if someone's going to turn around and tell me, as an Australian citizen, I can't put something on the internet just because I host it in the States, well, you know what? I'll take my money somewhere else. But more to the point, if the Australian government wasn't behind this, what's the American government trying to do to tell me what I can and can't do?
Sure, sure. Yeah. So it's not like I don't want anybody to get the wrong impression. It's not like if they pass this legislation, the internet would shut down, right?
But a lot of what people enjoy on the internet would go.
It could. It could right away, especially file sharing or things that are involved in that kind of process for music.
Mm.
But the scary part of that to me isn't that, because the pirates are just going to find ways around it, right? So that's going to pop back up somewhere else, right? The scary part is that a year or two later, for some reason, the government could then step in and close down a legitimate site that has nothing to do with file sharing or piracy, and they can, you know, they can cover this under the Patriot. Oh, I'm sorry, I used the wrong one. They can cover the, they can cover it underneath the. You know what?
The Soap and Paper Act, yeah.
The average guy.tv is going to get shut down tonight. I'm going to log in the morning because I dissed the Patriot Act. Well, yeah, it's that kind of lack of due process. So I think that's the most concerning thing to me in that, you know.
Well, I think what has come through, though, is when you look at before the tracking of the, I guess, the feedback that has been received from probably more so the American communities than the global community. You know, on the 18th of January in Congress, there was 80 supporters of the proposal, and there were 18 opponents. After the blackout, there's now 65 supporters and 101 opponents. So to me, that shows the true power of people en masse.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I think it was when you went to wikipedia.org, the first thing you had come up with after you got the blackout screen was, you know, please enter your zip code. You put in your zip code and it gives you every possible politician that you could have in that area where you live. Yeah. I mean, that's the power of speech. It had their Facebook address, their email address, and their Twitter account.
Right.
You know, you know full well why the opponent number's gone up, because these guys have just been hammered.
Yeah,
with a wave of negative feedback.
And that's where the individual makes a difference. And So can an individual make a difference? No. Sometimes you don't feel like it. Can an individual, when acting with a lot of individuals, make a difference?
Yeah.
I think absolutely.
And individuals en masse. Yeah.
It's I think it's a great day in America when Hawaii 5-0 comes on when Michelle calls during the show. I think it's a good day for a democracy when
it'll just be someone sending me a fax. It's okay.
Sending you a fax to your to your cell phone. Yeah, again, whether you're for it or against it, and again, I don't want to turn this political, but I think most of the folks that are listening to the show would say that what the legislation they were proposing would not be effective against piracy, which is what they were trying to do. And I'm all for trying to find ways to curb privacy and make sure that musicians get their fair share of revenue, and what they are artists, and they need, that's what they make. That's what they make. It's no different than someone stealing something out of your home in a lot of ways. But that being said, it's a great day, and it's a good day for democracy when that system works and that, and that people are heard. So anyways, very cool. That all happened. I think this, I would think this might be the first, and I'm sure there could be other things, but this might be one of the first legislative movements that has completely happened online, right?
I better get that.
Yeah, go ahead and grab it real quick. We'll pause for a second. With just Andrew and I. Let's see, we'll sit in the chat. Anybody got anything to say in the chat? $39 Logitech headset. Yeah, you guys were talking about equipment. I will mention that. Let's see, I got a message here somewhere. We were talking about Google Hangouts, and to use them, it is best to use a headset of some kind. Both for your listener. Andrew has a headset there, one of the traditional kinds, you know, ears with a mic thing out. We use some. This is a Blue Yeti mic. Can you hear me, Andrew?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Good.
Yeah, I've got your old traditional behind the head Logitech ear headset that gives you stereo and a little boom mic that moves up and down in front of your face, and you can. You know, I think I've got a meter and a half, 2 meters worth of. With a cable, so I can get up and move around a bit. From time to time, I also use a Plantronics 330, which is a Bluetooth headset for the guys in the stream. That's it there. That just hangs over my ear, and that gives me a range of about 25 meters. I can use that with Skype. Bad. Yeah, and I can use it with Skype. I can use it with Google Hangout. I can use it with Office Communicator or Microsoft Link, and it also works with my mobile phone. So I can go from the PC to the phone to wherever, and they run out at about $130-140, but they're very comfortable. They get about a 6.5 hour talk time, and you can play music through it. Not that it's great for that, being a single speaker. But very comfortable and multi-purpose, and you get away from the whole hands-free thing in the car with it because you don't know it's there, and you don't run the risk of falling foul of the law by talking on a phone without hands-free.
Yeah, it's a good little system. I think when you're if you're going to do online chat, it does help. You can do it through the speaker, you know, through your speakers and through the microphone on your camera. In most cases, but it really, you do get really better quality if you've got some kind of headset going.
Oh, yeah.
And it just helps. Sometimes you get an echo and it's hard to hear somebody. So, you know, a little, actually I had a friend go to Walmart, and for $18.88, you know how Walmart's weird pricing is, at least here in the United States, $18.88, she picked up a set of headphones that worked really, really, I mean, they sounded really good right out of the chute. And so you can find a cheap pair of headphones and do it that way. Just to wrap up that that discussion on the open and free internet, at 4 o'clock this afternoon. So this, we're recording this on January 19th, 4 o'clock this afternoon Central or Eastern. There were a bunch of sites then that were, you know, there were some folks that were arrested this morning. 7 individuals arrested who run some sites that do this this file sharing and media. You know, where there's music being shared. And so the Department of Justice, Motion Pictures Association of America, Universal Music, the Recording Industry Association of America, the FBI, the U.S. Copyright Office, Universal Music France, of course, Senator Christopher Dodd, who is behind a lot of this legislation or was one of the co-sponsors in this, I think, the White House, and BMI, were all attacked The hackers went after him to kind of retaliate for, which is just it's just a kind of an interesting, kind of commentary on.
That always ends badly, though.
Yeah, well, it's the old mob retaliation, right? I mean, they're going after it where it hurts, and a lot of these government sites aren't buttoned up very well, and So as of the last writing, White House Copyright Office, Christopher Dodd, BMI, the MPAA, and the FBI, Viacom, Universal had all come back up, but there were some that were still down. So this is there's some people who feel strongly about this, and I think it's going to be a debate that we're going to have for a while. I don't want to get into a political debate about it, but it's it's going to hang around for a while. If you're not paying attention, you might want to. I think it's going to affect how we use the internet.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to I don't think most people are considering it to be political. I think most people probably consider it more to be an infringement on their own rights.
Yeah.
That's sort of very much sure. My read on it.
Sure. I mean, what if I said, I didn't agree with something that President Obama had acted into legislation or had deemed into legislation, and then the next day my site was taken down?
Yeah, exactly. And
it has that kind of broad, or could have that kind of broad sweeping power. And I don't want but that. That's not liberty.
Yeah, you know? It also has the implication of if I say something someone doesn't like, you know, where do you stop?
Right.
You know, we have similar issues here. We've got politicians down here who are trying to do the right thing with inappropriate content, so child pornography and stuff like that, and broadstream pornography. But at the end of the day, it comes down to that. That's one guy's opinion against how the internet should be used in this particular instance, and he's got no backing from anyone, but he's still pushing the barrow. So, yeah, it'll be interesting, but it still comes back to my spin is it comes back to what I was saying before, you know, global uncontrolled unpoliced media. How do you
right?
You know, how come?
Well, you come up with a new model, right? You come up with a different model that combats piracy. You don't. It's the old model. We could talk about this forever. John said, John who's Joe Miner in the chat, said they're going to come and take my SSD drive away from me. Well, to move away from that, Andrew, either today or yesterday, Jerry Yang has resigned as the CEO of Yahoo. If a tree fell in the forest and no one was there to hear it, would it make a sound?
I think Yahoo's had the writing on the wall for some time now.
Yeah, but what do they do with it? I mean, it's a huge... Yeah. The traffic at Yahoo is still gigantic.
It's an immense beast, isn't it? But what's going to happen? You know, will Microsoft pick it up? You know, is the only reason Yahoo existed the way it has for so long been because Jerry Yang's been sitting there going, I didn't build it for this. You know, is it... So now does that mean that there's a potential that Microsoft are going to come and absorb it into Bing and, you know, they'll probably... And, you know, the whole Yahoo Mail, make the best of Hotmail and Yahoo Mail or... You know,
about properties worth anything.
Yeah, but then what about the rest of it? You know, Yahoo TV in Australia at least never got up and did anything. I don't know about the US.
No.
Then there's probably some search technologies that, you know, an organization like Microsoft would integrate. But I think as a search engine, I can't remember the last time I ever went to Yahoo. Yeah, Rennie's just put in the chat that Yahoo is the Kodak of search.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they had it. They had it all. I mean, they had email. They had search. Yeah. They were Google before Google. And they had all the right ideas. I mean, they bought properties. They tried to absorb them in. They tried to make their web presence make sense. But it just didn't, you know, Google came right behind them and just blew past them because Yahoo did not capture the revenue portion of it. I mean, Google did it all. Google didn't do it better. They just did it with better revenue.
Yeah. But I think the thing that Google had over Yahoo was their marketing machine. You know, when's the last time you heard anyone say, I'm just going to go on Yahoo something?
We call our kids Yahoos, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's become the vernacular, hasn't it? You know, you always Google something. I'll go and check that on Google. I'll go and look at it on YouTube. I'll go and, you know, I'll subscribe to it in Google Reader. You know, we use Google Docs. We use Google Mail.
Right.
You know, it's just they're just there. You know, they've just done it.
Well, I think not to debate it, because we know Google's on its way, or Yahoo's on its way out.
Yeah.
Be interesting to see what happens to it. It wasn't long ago that Microsoft had offered them $15 a share, something like that, for it. And at the time, it was a terrible deal for Yahoo. At least that's what they said. Boy, I bet Microsoft's glad they didn't do it. And Yahoo is crying that they did do it. It'll be interesting if they just kind of fade out into oblivion. I don't really know what they can do at this point.
Yeah. So. It'll.
Meanwhile, our friends over at Microsoft reported an earnings for their fourth quarter. Revenue was $20.89 billion. $20 billion for the quarter.
Wow.
You know who says Microsoft's dead? And there's, I've heard comparisons talk about, well, they're the next IBM, and you know what? That might be true. But they made $20 billion last quarter, and that's down a little bit, right, from where it was last year at this time. But, dude, that's a juggernaut.
That's a lot of cash. That's a serious amount of coin, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of coin.
How do they compare to... How do they compare to Apple? If we looked at a year by year comparison, you know, I haven't looked at the numbers myself, but I would suspect that Apple are probably probably making a move that's fairly similar. But I'd reckon from anecdotally what you hear around the traps, I'd reckon Apple are probably going to be growing faster.
Well, certainly they have the momentum,
and
Microsoft doesn't, and you know their leading products. They are, you know, IBM still continues to make a crap load of money off of things that they patented and sold 25 or 30 or 40 years ago, and so that's how they survive. Microsoft will be in the same boat. You know, it would take 100 years to bring down Microsoft with all the money they have in the bank. If they're just managed halfway well, I mean, they don't even have to be managed very well. You know, somebody could just come in and do nothing, and that company could survive for a long time with the money that they have in the bank. But somebody said in chat that, you know, they don't have – what do they have that's really leading edge at this point? And what do they have that's not necessarily the leading edge but perceived as leading edge? Windows Phone? No.
Yeah, and then you see Apple come to the market with things like their latest announcement, which is the iBook 2, where they're looking at bringing the textbook into the iDevice. You know, from a pure education perspective, that gives them, I think they're saying, for their vice president of marketing said that they currently got 1.5 million iPads being used in the educational sector. Well, if they get textbooks onto the iPad, that number's gonna, you know, increase tenfold, hundredfold. You know, how many kids are there out there who are in the education sector who, if they can get their textbooks electronically, will? I think that's, you know, if Microsoft was coming to market with something like that, then there's a potential for them to get that sort of growth, but you know, it's all in the iDevice.
So how much more do you think Apple's revenue is than Microsoft? Just guess. What do you think?
How much higher is Apple's revenue? Percentage?
Dollar.
Can I
just guess. If Microsoft is $20 billion, what's Apple at, you think? What do you think their quarterly revenue is?
36.
Lower.
32.
Lower.
28.
Yeah, you're right. Right on. 28.5 in the third quarter.
Third time lucky. That's what they say, isn't it?
That's like I found my keys in the last place I looked. Well, that's
yeah, exactly. It was
right?
Usually find most things you can't find in the last place you look here.
Yeah. So in the quarter that ended June 25th, this is the one I just found, the company posted record quarterly revenue. This is record at $28 billion. So they're setting records at this point. Net profit of $7.31 billion or $7.79 per share. Okay, so remember those numbers. And then we pop back over here, and earnings for Microsoft, $20.89 billion with earnings of $0.77 per share. I mean, that...
I know who I'd be buying stock in.
Who has more outstanding shares of stock? Yeah. Apple or Microsoft? That's, I think that is the question. Let me see here what their profit was.
But what's the alternative really? If you didn't go, if you didn't look at Apple and you didn't look at Microsoft, where would you go?
What do you mean to?
Well, from an operating system hardware perspective.
Oh.
When I say. Say Windows, you treat every hardware manufacturer as being agnostic in this instance. But where do you turn?
Right now,
you turn it off.
Yeah.
in a way.
Yeah.
It's a hard one. I mean, the open source community don't have a replacement. Not yet. Not in my view.
No, right. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, every PC in the world runs Windows at this point, just about. I mean, okay, there are some running the iOS, but it's. I mean, think about it. There are no iOS devices in gas stations that feed kiosks, right, or gas pumps.
Yeah, true.
Right? You know, there's so many Windows-running devices at this point. And, you know, those could be replaced in 5 years, but... and I'm not making a... I'm not making a decision one over the other. It's just it's an interesting look at both companies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
40 years ago, we would have been talking about Xerox and IBM. And that crazy, right?
Oh, that's nuts, isn't it? And where's Xerox these days?
Where's IBM these days? You know, they're there because they were, you know, they were saved in the 90s, and they're pretty well run now.
True.
They do have some good management behind them, and they're gonna, you know, they basically run on an endowment though for the most part. Very interesting.
Gartner said in August 2011 that they estimate that the Apple PC market share in the US is 10.7%.
So a tenth.
Yeah.
90% PC, 10% Mac. That'll change. I mean, the iOS and Android, right? That's, you know, you ask the question, what's next? I mean, that's the battle, right? It's iOS and Android for sure. And so.
Yeah, I don't think Google are going to get. I don't think Google are going to capture the market with the Chromebook somehow.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
We need to be more connected for that to happen.
Yeah, the problem with Google is that they're not hungry enough in the OS. You know, when any company that gives away their intellectual property doesn't have enough invested in it, and I know they do. I know why they do that, right? Because the more people that are on it, the more revenue is generated through the advertising, because that OS drives that stuff to advertising. But when it's your bread and butter. You know, you're more apt to protect it, and I get a little iffy around Chrome or Android because they're, I don't know. Certainly, you know, the latest number is 750,000 activations of Android per day. That's suspect. It's a suspect number. It's hard to believe, but even if it is true, that's a lot of Android devices that are out there. I got one right here.
Yep, I got one here.
Yeah, yeah. So snap. Pretty nice. Pretty nuts. Well, you know what, Andrew? The second half of the show, fairly unconventional home tech podcast stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy.
It's also stuff that, you know, I think a lot of people are worrying about it at the moment. You know, the the internet stuff to me is sort of, it's almost the Napster, the whole Napster thing from a few years back. And I think if the outcome ends up being the same, I think it proves the point that was proved around the whole Napster thing with the recording industries and the like. I just don't think it's going to, it'll just go somewhere else.
Yeah, right. No, right on.
And I don't think any country's ever going to do what China did, you know. There's never going to be a firewall around the US.
Let's hope
and,
not.
And you know, as the Australian government's proved they can't do it here either.
Right. We do, I heard this today, so no original thought here, but the music industry needs to find a better way to distribute their content where piracy is accounted for.
Yeah. Well, iTunes is a good model for that, but the pricing model isn't comparable to buying a physical CD in a store or a DVD in a store versus saving $2 to download it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't say I have the answer. I don't know what the answer is. Artists, my son is an artist. I have two artists in our family and who will someday hopefully make money that way. And, I want to see them get paid for what they do.
Yeah.
And that's fair. But at the same time, I don't want a spook hiding in every, jumping out of closets and scaring me just because. I don't want a police state just so that the music industry can make money.
Yeah, true.
So I think we learned with Prohibition that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're gonna make moonshine. It's gonna happen, right?
Yeah, we'll come back to the Al Capone days, Tommy.
Oh, if there was never a bigger failure in that, I mean, just go back to Prohibition. Study what the U.S. government tried to do during the Prohibition era. You can't. You just can't, right? And now, is it right to legalize alcohol? And now we have a culture that has large problems with alcohol abuse. Yeah, I get why they did it. I get it, but I don't know. That's just not freedom.
Yeah, it'll be the same discussion with the whole smoking debate as well.
Yeah. Well,
we could go with this for hours.
We just in the state of Nebraska, we just banned it everywhere. Sure, you can buy cigarettes all you want. You just can't smoke them anywhere.
Yeah. And look, Australia's going down that path. I think about 7 or 8 years ago, you stopped being able to smoke in a restaurant.
Right.
You now can't smoke in a bar. You got to go outside. It's just a matter of time before they'll encourage it to, you can't, even now you can't smoke in your car if you've got kids in the car.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can be fined for that.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's a matter of time.
Yeah.
With stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting it'll be interesting to follow this, because it's not over today, right? It's not like it's over. This is going to be a battle in Washington, D.C., here in the U.S. for a while now. And it is related to tech in the sense that it affects directly everything we see on the internet. So,
damn straight.
I shouldn't say everything, but a lot of stuff. So if you feel passionately about it, write your congressman, give him a call, let him know. It's still not too late. Let him know that you're for or against it. And however you feel. It does matter when people do that, and if you feel passionate about it, get it done. So, Andrew, a good show. I'm glad you came out tonight, and sorry we couldn't get Gary on here. We gave it a run, and it probably would have been a different show if we'd had him, but it always is that way. Yeah. Gary is back next week. You, me, Christian, and Gary next week.
Yep. Cool. And sorry for those people who didn't really want the political discussion, but It's the spin side of when two guys just get around and start to have a chat.
Well, and I hope we didn't. One of the things I didn't want to do was make it that I have a right opinion on it.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to decide where they're at with that, and
absolutely
do what they feels best. I don't have a strong opinion of it that I necessarily want to impose on anybody else. But I do want to say, if you feel passionate about it, go make a difference. Go do something about it. And if you're here in the U.S., you have plenty of opportunities to do that and make it happen. So if you're not in the U.S., I'd really be interested in why you're listening to this podcast. So send me an email. podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Andrew, we do have quite a few Australian listeners. I've checked the map from time to time, and we've got a good representation from Australia there. You guys should rise up and be counted as the Home Absolutely. Tech Podcast listener. So send me an email, podcast at theaverageguy.tv. Of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just search for The Average Guy Podcast. Send me a tweet if you'd like. That's just at Jay Collison, and the rest of our information, including Andrew's Twitter and everybody else's account, is out there. TheAverageGuy.tv will have the show posted on Saturday. Andrew, thanks for coming out tonight, and we'll do it all again next week here, TheAverageGuy.tv/live, 7 p.m. Central. Although we should move that to 7:30. But 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, and is that what time is that there?
Midday Australian Eastern Standard.
Midday Australia Eastern Standard Time. Is it straight up noon?
Yeah.
Is it straight up noon?
Straight up.
All right. Noon Australian Standard Eastern Time. Eastern Standard Time? I think I get that right. Have a good evening, Andrew. We'll catch you next time.
Have a good one, folks. Have a good one, Jim.